This is Audible.
Blue Nose presents Grandma's House, written by Amy Tackett, performed by Savannah Thomas and Joe Arden.
This title includes adult themes and is recommended for mature audiences. For a complete list of trigger warnings, please visit authoramytackett.com.
Maisie. Lucas is going to propose tonight. I can feel it. All the signs are there. I retrieve the metal cookie sheet from the oven and start ticking off my mental checklist. 1, he's been super antsy. 2, he's extra weird anytime I peek at his text messages. And 3, everyone at work keeps saying they know what my Christmas gift is. Why would he tell all of our coworkers what he's getting me for Christmas if it wasn't an engagement ring? Maybe it's a puppy, my sister Angelina had suggested when I called her earlier, to which I promptly rolled my eyes. Lucas may be a man, but he's not that stupid. He knows I don't want a pet until after we're married. They're basically like children, and I'm not going through a custody situation with a man I'm not even married to. No, thank you. We'll wait until we've tied the knot, and then we'll go and adopt a dog together. Preferably an old one that's about to get the axe at the local shelter. We love a good hero moment. I gently lift one of the green Grinch sugar cookies with an old spatula and inspect the bottom. Lightly golden brown. Perfect. I push the tray aside, then carefully insert the next one into the oven. This is the third batch I've made today, and even though we'll never eat them all, I can't help it. I've been at it for days. But Christmas is a time for baking. Gingerbread crinkle, ooey gooey butter, peppermint chocolate chip. I mean, honestly, how is a girl supposed to just pick one? I set the timer and dust my hands off, watching the excess flour evaporate into a sea of white. I cock my head and smile. I wonder what a diamond would look like coated in flour. My phone chimes, pulling me from my fantasy. It's Lucas.
Excited for tonight?
The message reads.
I'll be there as soon as I get off work.
I squeal, then bite the inside of my cheek, nervously tapping my thumb against the screen as I send a reply. I had originally been mad when our boss told him he had to work today. We both work at a video game company, which, yes, is as cool as it sounds and is exactly where we met. But there's hardly any need for our office to work on Christmas Eve. I had started to object, to insist that Lucas stand up to our boss, but apparently there was a glitch in our newest game that was supposed to roll out in the new year, so it was deemed an emergency. I still pouted a little, but now I'm thankful for the alone time. It gave me a chance to settle my nerves. I spent the morning scrubbing the floors and baseboards, washing the windows, and vacuuming loose pine needles. Then I moved on to showering and getting ready, followed by dinner preparation and, of course, baking. Normally, we'd order takeout for Christmas Eve, since both of our families do a giant dinner on Christmas Day. But given the special occasion, I decided to put together a homemade lasagna for us. Plus, I'm sure Lucas will be exhausted after a long day at the office. The least I can do is cook for him. The only thing left to do now is tidy up the kitchen, pour us both a drink, and try not to get too excited. Because, again, he is totally going to propose tonight.
Babe, this dinner is amazing.
Lucas is staring at me from his spot on the couch, his eyes all dreamy and hazy from the inevitable food coma he's flirting with. I always heard the way to a man's heart was through his stomach, and I found that to be incredibly true with Lucas. We haven't talked about whether I'll continue working once we're married, but I'm hoping my cooking skills will help convince him when the time comes. Sometimes I wish I'd gone to culinary school instead of taking an admin job straight out of high school, but then I'd never have met Lucas. I'm so glad you like it. I smile and take another sip of wine, basking in the beauty of this moment. We're seated on an old sofa that I thrifted from a yard sale last summer when we moved in together. Lucas was skeptical at first. His tastes are very different from mine, but I think over time he's come to love it. Besides, it fits perfectly in our little cottage home. I take another sip and let my eyes drift lazily over him, admiring the view. Lucas is well over 6 feet, has dark, loose curls that sit atop his head, and is extremely well-built. Not too buff that it makes me insecure about my own figure, but not too scrawny either. He's just right. He also happens to be wearing the black Christmas sweater I gave him for his birthday last month. I know it's silly to gift someone something seasonal, but I couldn't resist. It looks like a traditional ugly Christmas sweater, minus the ugly part. It's coal black and has an alternating reindeer house pattern that wraps around his chest and back in a single stripe. He laughed when he first saw it, but I knew it'd look good on him. Everything looks good on Lucas. He catches me staring.
What?
He smiles. I shake my head, rolling my lips in to hide the laugh. Nothing. I just think you're cute. That's all. He offers me one of his half-grins, his fork still clamped between his teeth. I love when he does that. Please, propose already. My heart screams.
I can't wait to.
Our front door opens. I cock my head, confused. Did he invite someone over? And who just comes in without knocking? I look back at Lucas. He looks equally confused. Did you invite? The door swings open wider, the old hinges squeaking in their unmistakable tone, confirming I'm not hallucinating. The door reaches the wall behind it, and standing in the doorway is an old woman. Huh? Lucas is up and off the couch before I can even think.
Miss?
He starts, rushing past me.
Miss, can we help you?
The woman is inside our house now, removing a red coat and hanging it on a hook.
Ma'am, excuse me, what are you doing in our house?
She stops and finally looks at him, her wrinkles deepening. Who are you? Her voice is groggy, like perhaps she just woke up from a nap, but it's also deep, husky. A smoker, I think. Why are you in my house? She asks. And then I can't think at all. Confusion and shock ring through my pores. I look at Lucas. He's still just as stumped, although I detect a hint of anger in his expression, too. I suddenly realize I'm still sitting on the couch, my plate on my lap and my wine glass in my hand. I set them both down on the coffee table. Lucas clears his throat.
I'm sorry, I think you must be confused. My girlfriend and I own this home.
Is it bad that I cringe at his use of the word girlfriend? I'm so ready to be a fiancé. He continues, motioning toward me.
We moved in over the summer?
The lady furrows her brows a little deeper, then looks at me. The lighting is dim, but even from here, even from a distance, I can sense her gaze catching mine. Her gray-blue eyes are cloudy, but they pierce through me all the same. I shudder. Perhaps you're just a little confused? I smooth my skirt down as I stand. There are several other homes in this subdivision. They all look a little similar from the outside. What address were you looking for? I step around the couch, closing the distance between us to get a better look at her. She's tall for her age, leveling me at my own 5'6" stature. Her shoulders, however, are slumped, and it makes me wonder how tall she was before old age caught up with her. She has deep, weathered crevices covering every inch of her face. Her hair is categorically correct, short, gray, and curly. She bears a resemblance to my late grandmother. My heart softens. An awkward silence passes between the three of us as Lucas and I stand there, waiting for her reply. When none comes, I say, "Why don't we have a seat, here by the fire?" I motion to the small brick fireplace, where flames gently crackle in the background of our small, cozy living room. You must be freezing. That gets through to her. The elderly woman quickly removes her shoes and then shuffles over to the oversized yellow floral armchair, Another vintage find I just had to have that Lucas was kind enough to agree to. I love that man. She sinks into the worn cushions, then rests her head against the back of the chair and lets out a sigh. Ah, these old bones are so tired. Her eyes are closed. She looks peaceful. And then she shoots forward, all remnants of her previous serenity gone. I have to get dinner ready. Her voice startles me. We have some leftover lasagna. Would you like a plate? Lucas is still standing, hovering over us behind the couch. His arms are crossed. I can't read his mood. You can have lasagna for Christmas Eve, Nancy, she says. Your mother and I taught you better than that. I scrunch my nose, my eyes flicking to Lucas. Nancy? He mouths. I shrug, not knowing what to say. At first, he bites his lip, then starts shaking his head. His eyes widen, and he makes a circular motion with his finger, insinuating she's crazy. A brief flare of anger hisses through me. This woman is not crazy. She's clearly confused. She walked into our home on Christmas Eve night and started calling me by some other woman's name. She must have dementia or Alzheimer's. I need to talk to Lucas. I start to ask him if he can help me in the kitchen for a moment, but before I can, the elderly woman is on her feet again, shuffling like a humpback whale through my small living room. She easily navigates herself through the first floor, not at all caught off guard by the old home's layout, which I find odd. How did she know where the kitchen was? She didn't even have to ask. Has she been here before? She called me Nancy. Maybe that woman used to live here. There's no other way she'd know the layout of my home. An eerie chill scurries across my skin. I rub my arms in a fury, melting it away. Apparently, I need to turn up the heat. Lucas starts to follow her into the kitchen, but I grab his arm, making him stop. We should call someone, I whisper. He looks shocked.
Who? The old woman buster?
His cheap attempt at a joke is not amusing. Even his good looks have limits. More like the cops, I snap. She thinks I'm someone else and that this is her home. I think she's lost. Her family is probably worried about her. He scratches the back of his head.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
His fingers tap excessively against his cupped elbows. His nervous tick.
You keep her company. I'll call it in.
Relief floods me. Thank you, babe. I lean up on my tippy toes and give him a kiss. He mumbles something, but I ignore it. I'm already moving into the kitchen to help this poor old woman. Who knows what would happen if she accidentally fell? Visions of her hitting her head or grabbing a knife for support on her way down burn into my mind. I shudder, then walk faster. Ma'am? I peek my head around the corner as I enter, relieved to see she's standing upright. I realize at this very moment I never asked for her name. I'm so sorry. I didn't catch your name when you walked in. Silence. Maybe she didn't hear me. I try again. Excuse me, but what's your name, hun? This time, I'm greeted with humming. The low, soft jingle of a familiar Christmas song drifts into the room. I can't quite place it, but I know I've heard it. Regardless, it's apparently the only communication I'm getting from her. She's facing away from me, rifling through my cupboards. I consider moving around the island to touch her, maybe guide her back to a seat, but I'm afraid I may startle her. I've never known anyone with a cognitive impairment, but I've heard it's awful and can sometimes come with aggression. I know she's old, but I still don't want to rile her up too badly. What if she gets too worked up and has a heart attack, or tries to swing at me and breaks a hip? No, thank you. I chew my bottom lip until another idea comes to me. I finally figured out what she's humming. The Christmas song by Nat King Cole, or at least I think that's what it's called. It's the one about chestnuts roasting. I personally don't listen to much Christmas music, but my grandfather loved this song. That's why it sounded so familiar. He used to play it on his old record player every Thanksgiving, right after we finished dinner. That was when the Christmas season officially started for our family. I find where she is in the song and hop in with her. It feels strange at first as I try to remember the lyrics, but I suppose that's the good thing about humming. You can just let the tune and the emotions flow through you, a mix of nostalgia and sadness in my case. I lost both of my grandparents several years ago, both due to old age and various illnesses. I try not to be bitter about it, to be thankful for the time I had with each of them, but it's hard sometimes. The woman stops, and it takes me a moment to realize I'm the only one humming. Didn't I read somewhere that music was associated with memory? Perhaps if I actually sing the words, it'll spark something for her. Although nervous, I clear my throat, grab a plate from the cupboard, and start to sing as I fill the dish with cookies. I take it from the top, starting with the famous one-liner everyone knows, and praying beyond belief that she picks up once I get to the parts I don't know. She doesn't. Ugh. I guess I'll go back to humming. I urge the low vibration to move forward again, the once joyful melody creating an eerie backdrop to our evening, when she screams, "How dare you sing that song!" I jump. My heart falls to the pit of my stomach, yet somehow keeps beating. She's still turned away from me, but the sudden outburst makes me feel like she's breathing into my neck. I'm sorry, I stammer, trying to recalibrate, process what's happening. I don't get to finish my sentence. Because in an instant, this old woman has spun around. She's spun around and she's transformed, morphed into someone else. She's the same person, but suddenly her tender flesh now gleams with sweat, the sticky residue sliding off her wrinkles and dripping to the floor. Her once pale, soft eyes are now ablaze, a deep fury buried beneath them. And worst of all, her fragile, limp arms now appear strong, the moles and bruises no longer innocent bystanders, but rather accolades of her previous battle scars. She is holding a knife. And if looks could kill, I'd be 6 feet under.
Lucas. This old woman is ruining all my plans. This is all I can think as I jog upstairs in search of my phone. Maisie and I have always made it a rule, no phones at dinner. Well, I say we, but really it was her, and I can't blame her. I was spending way too much time checking my emails and notifications, worried I would miss something for work. I used to have a better work-life balance, but I've been trying to prove myself more lately so I can get a promotion. I haven't said anything about it to Maisie yet, in case it doesn't happen, but I know it's her dream to be a stay-at-home mom, and this pay raise would make that possible for us. Now, I just need Granny Beth, or Sue, or whatever her name is, to leave so I can propose. I'm not trying to be a dick, truly. It's just that I had this perfectly romantic evening planned for months now, and a hefty ring bill, and a confused old woman showing up has kind of put a damper on things. I'll have to really take things up a notch to recreate the mood and set the tone. I know women fantasize about their proposals, so I want to get this just right. The perfect core memory for my girl. The ring is beautiful, too, by the way. 2 carats beautifully sculpted in an emerald cut and set on a white gold solitaire band. Impressive, right? Of course, I didn't know what any of that jargon meant until her sister, Angelina, told me. She met me at a custom trunk show at our local jewelry shop and assured me this was exactly what Maisie wanted. I have no doubt she'll love it. I push open the old door to our bedroom, the slight creak reminding me I need to pick up more WD-40. I should have done it already, but with the proposal and work looming over me, I kept forgetting. There you are. I spot my phone and pick it up, prepared to call 911, but instead get distracted by a text from my boss, Lakin. Found another glitch, it reads. You got a second to talk. My brows shoot to my non-receding hairline. This game is going to be the death of me, literally. As a gameplay engineer, I've overseen the development of dozens of video games over the years, and nothing has been as challenging as Demon Cannibal. Yes, it's as tacky as it sounds. Occasionally, I've wondered if it's God trying to intervene, trying to warn us. I don't dare say that to my boss, though. Lakin isn't religious. I hear a noise downstairs. Shit. The old woman is still here. Maisie would have a fit if she knew I was making work calls instead of calling the police. But my promotion is contingent on the success of this demented game. I grasp my elbow and tap my fingers against it. The noise starts to drift upward, and I realize it almost sounds like music. They're singing. Or humming? I don't know, really. But the thought makes me smile. They're obviously getting along fine. Surely I have time to make one quick call. Yup, calling now, I type. But I never get to hit send, because just then, I hear a blood-curdling scream.
Maisie. I lay on the floor, stunned in silence. A moment ago, I was humming a Christmas carol, eating my homemade cookies, and wondering whether Lucas was still going to pop the question. And now, I'm lying on the floor in a puddle of my own blood. It's strange how life works. Most people assume they'll die from old age, maybe cancer for a few of us, perhaps a tragic accident for others. Almost no one expects to be stabbed to death by a little old lady. I blink rapidly, try to breathe, as flashes of what just happened splinter into my mind. She had looked so innocent, so old, until she didn't. In an instant, this old woman who I had gingerly tried to care for, felt compassion for, slit my throat with my own kitchen knife. The worst part is, I watched her do it. I asked her to set down the knife, begged her to please sit down. "You're just confused," I'd said. But in the end, it didn't matter, because she still strolled over and sliced into my flesh all in one swift motion. I don't even know if it hurt. It happened so fast, the blood gushed out so intensely, so immediately, that my brain didn't have time to process my body's response. I just stood there in shock until I couldn't. Then I sank to the floor, my knees giving out, my organs shutting down, and my mind spiraling, yet somehow frozen in fear. There was simply nothing I could do. Now I lie here, quietly drifting, wondering if Lucas really did buy me a ring. I guess I'll never know. I close my eyes. Everything fades so fast.
Lucas. Maisie! Her name falls off my lips before I have time to register what I'm seeing. Her body, surrounded by blood, her eyes rolling into the back of her head, her throat slashed open with gangly tendons hanging out. It's horrific. Maisie! I scream again and fall down the steps, tripping on the second to last one. My shoulder lands on the old hardwood floor with a thud. I can already feel the throb of a deep ache, but it does nothing to distract me from the ghastly sight of my girlfriend bleeding out on the kitchen floor. I scramble across the remaining hardwood and onto the linoleum, crawling to her, needing to know she's okay, that things aren't as bad as they seem. But they are. Help! I press the tips of my fingers to her neck, then her wrist, trying to find a pulse. Fuck, nothing. Maisie, come on, baby, come on. I start patting her face, but it does nothing. She doesn't respond. Don't you die on me, babe. A hot tear leaks down my face. I wipe it away quickly, not wanting it to fall on her perfect skin. We have a wedding to plan for. You can't get rid of me this easily. When she still doesn't respond, my panic accelerates. Damn it, Maisie, you cannot die. I've never trained for a crisis, but somehow my body knows what to do. Without thinking, I open her mouth, clear her airway, then take a giant gulp and start breathing into her lungs. I do this twice, then start pulsating on her chest, praying that Jesus will bring her back, give her back to me. We are too young for this, too young for such tragedy. We have our whole lives in front of us. I can see it like a live motion picture setting into place. Maisie wearing a khaki-colored floral dress, me in my good jeans and a green button-up flannel. We're sitting on a porch swing, our hands clasped as she admires her rings. Then two little girls run into the frame, one hopping up beside us for snuggles while the other twirls like a ballerina. They're in matching pink dresses, their hair braided into pigtails with wildflowers tucked into them. It's the start of a beautiful life. One I'm not giving up on yet. Please! I shout into the void, into the empty house, and then I remember, it's not empty. We're not alone. The woman. Did she do this? My body stiffens. Certainly not. She must have been, what, 80? 90? Surely, if she tried anything, Maisie would have been able to stop her. Then another thought consumes me. We didn't lock the door after the woman came in. Hadn't even thought of it in spite of everything. I curse myself now, both anger and fear settling into my veins. Did someone else break in? Are they still here? What if they hurt the old lady? Or come after me next? Police. Why didn't I call the damn police? I squeeze my eyes shut, chastising myself more, when I hear a tune. The same tune I heard just moments ago when I was upstairs ready to call my boss. It's a Christmas carol. The old woman is still here, and she's humming it. At first, it feels strange, yet soothing, oddly comforting in a way, and then quickly it turns into something else, something unexplainable that chills the blood in my very veins, turning it into shards of ice. Fear creeps into my psyche, and in an instant, my jumbled thoughts sharpen. I know. It was her. What did she do to you, Maisie? My mind starts to wander, racing with angry, violent thoughts. If she did this, if she killed my future bride and the mother of my children, a burst of noise comes barreling through the front door, cutting me off.
Mom?
A woman's voice.
Mom, there you are.
The humming stops for a moment, then starts up again.
Atlas, come help me with your grandmother.
My head is pounding. Who are these people? Why are they in my home? Come here, Ma! I hear a younger, slightly masculine voice say, probably 11 or 12 if I had to guess. Intruders or not, my mind finally catches back up to me. These people can help. They have to help. I'm in here. My voice is shaky, barely audible. I clear my throat and try again. I need help, please. Silence greets me, and for a moment I wonder if I've imagined the whole thing, if I've somehow dreamt this all up and I'm perhaps losing my mind. Help! I scream louder. This sends them into action. In less than a minute, I hear their footsteps echoing down the hallway. I breathe a sigh of relief when a middle-aged woman comes into view, trailed by, you guessed it, a preteen boy.
Oh, dear.
This is my girlfriend? I start, pausing to lick away the saltwater tears that have streamed onto my lips. Please, you have to help her. I don't have my phone, and we need to call the police. I still haven't felt a pulse since I found her, but I refuse to acknowledge she's gone. Please, I repeat, desperate for these people to be the heroes of my story. The woman shakes her head, then puts a hand out in front of her son to stop him.
You shouldn't have to see this, Atlas. Go back in there with Ma.
Relief washes over me, the hope pulsing through me, palpable. I don't even care who did it at this point. I just want Maisie alive. My eyes flick to the woman who is digging through her purse for her phone.
I'm so sorry about this. She gets confused. I can't keep my eyes off her for one second without her wandering off and doing something like this.
Something like this? Has she done this before? Has this woman murdered others before? Why was she not locked up? A sudden rage fills my body. I begin to stand, begin to voice these very questions, but before I can, my world goes black.
Valerie. Sigh. That was rather dreadful. We weren't supposed to kill these people until tomorrow morning. I wanted to keep them as fresh as possible for Ken's return. Mom's been getting worse and worse, though, lately, wandering off and forgetting where she's going, forgetting everything she's taught us about how to target, how to kill, how to keep it in the family. If it weren't for the tracking device we implanted in her while she was sleeping last month, I'd have no idea where she was, and who knows what would have happened then. I shudder thinking about it. We'll have to do something about her eventually. Atlas? I yell, my voice echoing off the home's old walls. I need you to come clean these people up. Their deaths were bloodier than we anticipated, but Atlas knows what to do. He's a good boy. I slide past him in the hallway and find Mom resting on the sofa with a plate of cookies. Let's get you some real food, I say, gliding a hand beneath her elbow and helping her stand. You can't live off sweets alone.
All they have is lasagna,
Mom spits. I weave us through the home's delicate floor plan, the one we've spent months surveying. Did you really expect anything else? I help her settle into the chair at the kitchen table. Mom simply grunts, leaving it at that. I've told her time and time again that not everyone subscribes to our lifestyle. But again, with the old age, her brain is giving out on her. Dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever you want to call it. I personally think she accidentally ate some of the brain from our last client, and that's what caused it. But tomato, tomato. She's losing it either way. I sigh and walk around Atlas as he sets to work, carefully soaking up the blood and treating the carcasses with respect. He really is a fine young man. His father would be proud of him today. If only Nancy could be here. Our family hasn't been the same since she left. I shake my head, not wanting to think about that now. Instead, I make quick work of the outdated kitchen and heat up a plate of food for Mom. I consider having some for myself, but I want to save my appetite. Make sure you take extra care of the man, I tell Atlas. I think we'll have him first. My son grins at me, a sly twinkle in his eye. He knows there's nothing quite like nuts roasting on an open fire. I smile, sit down next to Mom, and hum to myself. Merry Christmas. It's going to be a fine feast. Thank you for listening to Grandma's House, written by Amy Tackett. Performed by Savannah Thomas and Joe Arden. Produced by Blue Nose. Production coordination by April Carmody. Engineering by Taylor Alexander. Proofing by Laura Noble. If you enjoyed this production, please take a moment to rate and review it. It means more than you might know. Be the first to know about upcoming titles, cast reveals, live interviews, and more by following Blue Nose on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Blue Nose Audio. And be sure to download the Blue Nose Audio app for tons of free bonus content and the opportunity to support indie authors with direct-to-consumer sales. Find out more about our growing catalog of full-length audiobooks and extras at bnaudioapp.com. Production copyright 2026 by Blue Nose Publishing. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.